now, White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball.
Get the fireworks ready.
White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
Well, welcome in to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight, and we've got you for 2 hours this evening, right up until our pregame show starts. That'll be the White Sox and Colorado Rockies, of course. Hoping for a little better outcome than we had last night against the Rockies. Jose Quintana and Jeff Hoffman, the starters this evening. Hoffman been off to a pretty good run over the last couple of starts, and Jose Quintana's been just, well, he's been Jose Quintana over the last few, and that's been a bunch of fun to watch. Here's what we got planned on the show for you this afternoon, this evening, really. I mean, 5:30, this is, although the sun is still out, and it is, I got to tell you, this is probably the nicest day we've had yet all summer. It is absolutely gorgeous outside. Don Kleppen, my producer, and I are just, we're just sitting here in the studio looking outside and envying you who are sitting outside, hanging out, enjoying this wonderful weather and listening to White Sox Weekly. Can't thank you enough for that. Friday, July 14th. I'll let you know what we got planned in just a little bit here. Friday, July 14th is 90s night as your Sox take on the Seattle Mariners at 7:10. Join us as we play your favorite throwback jams throughout the game, and be sure to stay for a post-game fireworks show presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Visit WhiteSox.com to purchase your tickets today. We're actually going to get in on 90s night as well on the broadcast on WLS AM 890. We will have the pregame show, of course, and the postgame show. And, there's a little music in between the game, too, or during the game, I should say. And I think what I've planned with Dave Zaslavsky, our executive producer of White Sox Baseball, I think I'm just going to take, you know, that big visor rack of CDs that you had back in the 90s when you were driving around, that thing that Velcroed around the sunshade that you pulled down, and then invariably as you pulled it down, one of the CDs or two or maybe all of them if you were me would fall out and all over the place while you're trying to drive the Saab stick shift that you were trying to learn on at the same time. Real safe stuff. Anyway, I still have that sunshade visor packed with 90s albums because that's when I was cruising around in the 85 Saab. So I thought maybe I'd bring those in and we'd get in on the throwback 90s night as well. You can just hang out at the ballpark July 14th on 90s night as the Sox take on the Mariners. But if you're listening to the broadcast, I promise some 90s flavor as well. So thank you. Thank you. Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you, Don. Thank you. So here's what we have planned for you this afternoon on the show. It's a good one, and mostly because of the people we're going to talk to. Colin Whitchurch, Baseball Prospectus Southside, is going to join us right after the 6 o'clock news. So that's coming up here in just a little bit, about a half an hour or so. We'll talk to Colin. In case you missed it, Baseball Prospectus, the mothership, the big site, put out the top 50 midseason prospects just a day or two ago. And yeah, not a surprise here. The White Sox are prominently featured in that list. And that's nice to see, no doubt about it. A couple of names that you no doubt know, but it's, you know, a few have slid, and a few have moved up, a few have had interesting seasons so far. So we'll talk to Colin about some of those guys and about the big league team in the whole, too, because as we approach the All-Star break, what is it, two games now left before the All-Star break tonight and tomorrow afternoon, then we've got 4 days off, then it's the post-All-Star break, then it's the 2.5-week sprint to the trade deadline, which I always find, regardless of whatever team I've happened to cover in the past or now the White Sox the last two seasons, I've always found the deadline as a baseball fan to be one of the more playoffs aside, to be one of the more exciting times. I love the panic. I love the frenzy. I love the just complete chaos of it all as you come down to the last 4 or 5 days. Reports everywhere and hypotheticals all over the place. And what if you move this? And I love that about baseball. I love that in baseball that matters seemingly more than other sports. You don't see any of that in the NFL. Nobody makes trades. Not really. Hoops, you see that pretty well. But I feel like in baseball, it seems so much more impactful. And even after the deadline's passed, you've got the August deals too, the waiver deals that can still go through. And those have been big players for teams that have made the playoffs over the last couple of seasons, too. And returns on some of those guys have been fairly interesting to watch. So I can't wait for the trade deadline. And we're starting to hear a little bit more of a solidified rumor mill come together, I think. You know, all season long, you heard so far, you've heard some of the same things over and over. Huh? Yeah, you know, the White Sox are listening on, you know, this, that, and the other guy. And, you know, the Royals aren't quite sure what they're going to do. And Boy, the Yankees could go add. I mean, stuff that you knew already. You knew these things. You knew that the Astros were going to be kicking tires on everybody you could find after they sprinted out to a 14-game lead in the first 9 days of the season. You knew that. And Rick Hahn has said many times what the aim, what the objective is this season. It's not a surprise that some of those were. But now we start to see something, feel something, and hear something a little bit more concrete. And that, to me, that's a blast. And I know White Sox fans are interested in it this year. We'll talk about that with Colin Whitchurch as well. Right about 6:35-ish, we're going to talk to Chris Getz, the White Sox Director of Player Development. Chris is in his first season in that role with the White Sox. We talked to him right when on the show, right as the season got going, I think. Well, I guess it would have been in spring training, so right before the regular season started. Caught up with Chris in Arizona, talked about a lot of stuff, and I talked to him. This conversation you'll hear took place yesterday morning. What's today, Saturday? Yeah, Friday morning, so it took place Friday morning. And he's on his way down to Miami. In fact, I think he's on the flight right now down to Miami to go see three of the White Sox prospects in the Futures game, which is tomorrow. Of course, that's Michael Kopech, starter for AA Birmingham. Zach Collins, who's the catcher at Winston-Salem, first-round draft pick last year. And Yoan Moncada, who is the best prospect in all of baseball, a guy who I think maybe seeing the big leagues soon. I certainly hope so. It'd be fun to watch. You got to keep the development track on the right, well, track, I guess. But I wouldn't be surprised at all to see one of those guys, Moncada, probably play a little big league ball this year. Anyway, those three guys are going to be in the Futures game. We'll talk with Chris about those three gentlemen, about development in general. And of course, we'll ask the question, the important one that I know I've been asked a lot just on post-game shows or whatever. When are these call-ups going to happen? You know, when are guys ready? What do you look for when you see a ball player that's ready to go from the minor leagues into the big leagues? We'll talk about that some with the director of player development for the White Sox, Chris Getz. We will, at 7:05, make a phone call to Dan Hayes of CSN Chicago. He is in Colorado, and before that was out west as the White Sox took on the A's in this the first three-game series of this six-game, seven-day road trip. We'll talk to Dan about what's going on with the 25-man roster, what the White Sox have been up to lately, losing their last three. We'll do a farm report for you, just kind of a more general look at some of the prospects. I have a couple of injury updates for you as well that we'll get into probably in the next minute or so. And, oh, your phone calls, as always, welcome here on the show. We call it the mailbag. There's two ways you can get into it, 312-591-8900. That's the phone number today. It's different than the pre and the post-game show number. It's just the way the wires are wired here. 312-591-8900. That's the phone number, 312-591-8900. I guess what I'm asking for right now, as far as your input, but we can talk anything you want regarding the White Sox. What is it that you're most looking forward to over the next, I'm going to make it real, next 2 weeks? Let's call it these next 2 weeks. Maybe it's just watching Avi Garcia in the All-Star game. And here's hoping that he's ready to roll and that his finger feels a little bit better than it had the last 2 days. Avi was not in the lineup yesterday and is not in the lineup again tonight. Willie Garcia is in right field, Melky in left, and Adam Engel is in center. So that jammed finger is keeping him out of yet another ball game. And I suppose as we dive into you can hit us on Twitter too. At C1McKnight is the Twitter handle. Anything you leave there for us throughout the week, we'll pick up in the mailbag. That's kind of how we like to work it. So Avi's out. That's part one of the injury update that I want to get you here before we take our first break. Miguel Gonzalez threw at AAA two nights ago. He went four and change, gave up seven hits, three runs, all of them earned, struck out a pair, didn't walk anybody, threw about 70-some pitches. And I would imagine, educated guess here, I hadn't seen this written, but an educated guess is that he continued throwing once he was taken out of the game. That's just usually what happens in those minor leagues, just to make sure you get to a certain number of pitches. But as that stamina builds back up, Miguel coming back from the sprained AC joint in his shoulder, the hope is that he can rejoin the rotation after a rehab start or three, probably, I think is kind of what Don Cooper and the rest of the White Sox staff were kind of pegging for, about three starts or so. We'll see how Miguel Gonzalez bounces back from some of those starts. Down in AAA, also Tyler Saladino, still working his minor league rehab stuff. He hit a homer the other night, has been hitting pretty well, was 6 of 12, did not play in last night's game. And I'm looking at today's game. He is not in the lineup today either, or at least wasn't for this first game. I think the Charlotte Knights, who lead the Louisville Bats 15-4 right now, top nine, I think they're going to take this one home. 20 hits for the Knights in that game. I would imagine Tyler's going to get another game or two. And this was from the White Sox last night, and we addressed it some on the post-game show, as memory serves. But an MRI on Luis Robert. Remember, he was one of the top international prospects that signed with the White Sox just a couple of weeks ago, in case you forgot. One of what would likely be a top 50 for sure prospect, maybe even a top 30 kind of guy, suffered a minor injury to the meniscus in his left knee. He was sliding, trying to steal home in a Dominican Summer League game. That was on Tuesday. He finished that game, which is important to note, right? I mean, so this isn't a you know, he finished the game. Some discomfort, though. They're going to keep him out for at least the next 7 days. Going to get some treatment, make sure the swelling goes down, all that good stuff. But that is the latest on Luis Robert. You should also know that he's been hitting, up until that knee injury, hitting really well in the Dominican Summer League, which was expected for a guy like him. That's something you should go out and do. Nice to check that box. Be really interesting to see when he makes his debut stateside and exactly how that goes. I mean, I'm champing at the bit to find out. I know the White Sox have added a lot of talent here of late. And speaking of, if we're talking about adding talent, I guess I'll squeeze in this note too. Jake Berger and Gavin Sheets, the first round and second round pick of the White Sox in this past draft, just a couple of weeks ago, they've both now debuted for Low A Kannapolis. Berger went 3-for-3 in his debut. No problem there. Run scored, a double, the whole deal. Sheets was still looking for a hit, I think. But still, both of those guys are there, debuting at Low A Kannapolis. And listen, they're advanced college bats, the both of them. And I wouldn't be all that surprised. I'm probably putting too much on it, and I would probably get a weird sideways look from Rick Hahn if I said this to him. I wouldn't be surprised if either of those gentlemen, maybe even both, move up one level before this season's out. I'm not saying they have to. I'm not saying if they don't, they're failed. Not by any means am I saying that. I just, given what I've heard from some scouts, from guys who have looked at them, from people outside the org who have looked at it too, wouldn't be surprised if that's the case, and I'm sure Rick Hahn will end me for even putting that thing on them. 312-591-8900 is the phone number. You can give us a call that way. You can hit us on Twitter at C1McKnight. This is White Sox Weekly. We come back, we'll dive into what the last four or five games for the White Sox have looked like, get into some deadline rumors that have popped up here over the last 48 hours or so, and we'll talk about starting pitching. We will talk, I think, quite a bit about starting pitching. This is White Sox Weekly. You've got WLS AM 890.
This is Gordon Deal. Join me weekday mornings 5 till 6 right before Big John and Ray on WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. Sox fans, you can join us as the White Sox take on the Cleveland Indians Saturday, July 29th at 6:10 p.m. The first 20,000 fans receive a 1917 throwback jersey presented by Xfinity. Xfinity X1 will change the way you experience TV. I got to tell you, the first time I saw the 1970 throwback jersey that they're giving away there, I was in the broadcast booth with Ed and DJ and Dave, our executive producer, and a couple other people, and we hadn't seen it yet. It came up on the screen, and everybody kind of got quiet, looked at the thing, and went, yeah, I'd wear that. That's a thing. I would absolutely, it's a sharp look. I don't know if you've seen it yet. Let's see if we can find a picture and tweet it out, but it is a sharp looking jersey. You can pick that up July 29th. First 20,000 fans get one. It's a 6:10 game against the Cleveland Indians. You can purchase your tickets for that ball game today, right now, in fact. Go to whitesox.com or call 866-SOX-GAME. That's all you've got to do. Let's see if there's anything else I needed to catch you up on before we hit the last. Oh, yeah. Okay. So Colin Whitchurch coming up at 6:05, which means we got a few minutes, you and I, to talk about what's been up with the White Sox of late, the last couple of ball games. And really, it's more than just the last couple. I think this goes probably back maybe half the month of June, now into July. It's kind of what about it feels like. And I think Derek Holland summed it up last night, and you'll hear it in the pregame show coming up at 7:35 this evening. I'm trying to make sure that I clean it up in the right way. He admitted he didn't pitch well last night. he used some fairly strong words that threw it on his shoulders, as you're supposed to do, as a guy, a veteran, like Derek Holland would do, a stand-up dude whose teammates respect him and who and he respects his teammates likewise, too much to the point where, or so much to the point where burden's got to be taken, I think, and he understands that that's his to take. Last night was a tough one. 4 innings, 8 hits, 7 runs. They were earned. 2 walks, 2 strikeouts, 2 home runs. Coors is a tough place to pitch in. It is. Ask the Rockies. My God. It's a tough place to pitch in. That said, you know, adjustments got to be made. And I think with Derek last night, whether he was falling behind early and then having to come back much closer to the middle of the strike zone than he'd wanted, whether he didn't have the kind of command that he was looking for, regardless of whether the command of his pitch, the shape of his breaking balls were everything he wanted them to be, whether that's the atmosphere or whether it's just having an off night, so be it. You got to find ways to pitch around that stuff. It's not me saying that. It's what Derek said last night. You know, I mean, that's kind of the process that you have to take from there. And unfortunately, that start comes in a run of starts for Holland and the White Sox, by and large, that have really tapped into a bullpen that's been tapped into already. I feel like we sing this song a little while, and it's what's been remarkable, absolutely remarkable, is the reliability that bullpen has come out with, by and large. There've been a couple outings here or there that haven't been all that great, but David Holmberg's been pretty good coming out of late. Tommy Canley had the rough one against the A's. You wish you hadn't given up that home run to Franklin Barreto to cost the White Sox the ballgame. I'm sure he wishes the same thing, but you can hardly – that's the third home run he's given up all season. He's struck out just about everybody else he's pitched to. Canley's been great. Anthony Swarzak has it coming back on. Dan Jennings has pitched really well. You know, there are guys – Chris Beck, time or two in the last week, hadn't looked up, but more or less, Chris Beck's been really good. And because of that, Ricky Renteria is able to go down to that bullpen when the starters come up a little short, which they have mostly recently, and count on just about anybody. That's pretty impressive to me. More so because bullpens can be so volatile from season to season. I mean, you try and build one, you try and pay for one, and I mean, heck, a team that the White Sox just got done playing, the A's, a few years ago when they were trying to push for it, when they thought they had some pieces, they were paying bullpen arms to come in and get this done. And it didn't work. Not because necessarily they signed the wrong guy, just bullpens are finicky things. Anyway, it's been interesting to watch that happen. But I think in the midst of that, right, this is the first series. This series against the Rockies, this is the first series the White Sox will have where Jose Quintana and Carlos Rodon are working in the same three-game series all year. This is game, I want to make sure I counted it right. Yeah, this is game 86. Game 86 and 87 will be the first two games Carlos Rodon and Jose Quintana have pitched in the same series. It's unfortunate. You know, you wish Carlos had been there to establish his development track for this season earlier. It didn't happen. And he's got one heck of a chance to pick things back up where he left off. And as we're talking about starting pitching here, I think what's been really, really interesting to watch and what I'm absolutely jacked to watch tomorrow afternoon, not that I'm not looking forward to Jose's start tonight. I actually really am. But Rodon tomorrow, you know, if he keeps up where he was last time out, striking out double digits, looking filthy. He threw 102 pitches his last start. Had, depending on which site you go by, Brooks Baseball had one, and I think Baseball Savant had another. But somewhere between 24 and 26 swings and misses on strikes. That's a ridiculous number. That's filthy, filthy stuff. You take that from coming off a start where he couldn't find the strike zone with a map. 6 walks, it was tough. He fought through it, impressive in itself. It just had to knock a lot of rust off. You go from that one to the last one, that's impressive as all get out. I'm very excited to see what Carlos Rodon is able to do against the Rockies at Coors Field tomorrow afternoon. I'm very excited to see what Jose Quintana is going to look like tonight. His last couple of starts have been really, really good. The ERA for Q in June and now into July, or since June started, I should say, into July, sitting around 1.5. You know, just 1.5. I think what's incredible to me is the up and down, the rough first 2 months Quintana had. And whether it was because you talked to Don Cooper, and we do every single series on the White Sox pregame show, you talk to Coop, and what he points out over and over again, and I think rightly so, is that in those rough starts he had, more or less, there's one here or there, the Boston start, I think Don Cooper said. That one was 11. Fair enough. There's really an inning in each of those bad starts, really just one inning. He just hadn't gotten out of. He just wasn't able to work around whatever contact it was, whatever extra base power there was, dingers, walks, the whole thing, whatever it happened to be in that start. One inning in there. And in that way, what I can tell you is that I think the White Sox saw that one inning, okay, this is workable. This is a very much a workable thing to figure out and deal with. And as he's dealt with, you know, that, some fastball command issues, changing up the prescription a little bit, tossing a few more change-ups, dialing back on the curveball, some the usage, I mean, not necessarily, you know, speed or shape, but the usage of it, I think Q's really kind of settled into being that guy we're all used to seeing so long. I think he's settled into that point so much that, and we talked about this at the top of the show, shouldn't surprise anybody here, at least not the fact that teams are looking at Jose Quintana and starting to do some of the due diligence that teams do right around this time of season. But it's a team like the Brewers, apparently. And this was a John Morosi, MLB.com, who had the report just, the 7th? So, yeah, yesterday. The Brewers, the surprise leaders of the National League Central, as John Morosi puts it, doing some background work on Jose Quintana and Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray's a guy we just saw, actually. The White Sox just saw him a few days ago. Gray's looking pretty good. In two starts against the White Sox, he looked pretty good. The Brewers make some sense, I guess, for both of those guys in that there's some control on both of those players. Brewers, mid-market team, they don't have the deep pockets that a team like the Yankees might. So going after a guy who might be a rental, and then you'd subsequently have to pay to keep him or not pay and, you know, kind of lose those prospects for a, you know, just a three-month shot. It's not the Brewers trying to pick up CC Sabathia as in, you know, a decade ago, but it's the Brewers trying to pick up a guy who can, you know, last and fit the profile of what they're trying to do. That's a good young team with a very good young farm system. A guy like Lewis Brinson, it'd be pretty interesting if you were able, whichever franchise you are, whoever you are, pry that loose from the Brewers. Be a pretty interesting thing. We'll talk about some of those minor leaguers, both in the White Sox system and outside, and a few other things, too, with Colin Whitchurch of BP Southside in just a few minutes. We will hit the news here at 6 o'clock. Sox fans, though, you can join us. The Sox take on the Seattle Mariners Saturday, July 15th at 6:10 p.m. First 20,000 fans receive a White Sox cap presented by the Private Bank. Purchase your tickets today by visiting whitesox.com or calling 866-SOXGAME. Probably just save that number and our number here, 312-591-8900. Probably just save those into your phone. Save them under White Sox and save them for a Saturday afternoon where you want to talk some White Sox with us. This is White Sox Weekly. You've got WLS AM 890.
If you missed John and Ray this weekend, you can always check out our podcast.
John and Ray in 60, you can find it at WLSAM.com. You can find it on the app. Just find it.
Back Monday morning, 6 a.m., WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890. MLB.TV every night, every device. Watch every out-of-market regular season game. Plus, get a free subscription to At-Bat Premium. Oh, God, I love At-Bat Premium. It's the number one app for live baseball. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details. A man who I'm sure has MLB.TV and at Bat Premium and all of the other goodies that come along, Colin Whitchurch of BP Southside joins us now on White Sox Weekly. Colin, long time, no talk. How you been, my friend?
Not bad, Connor. Thanks for having me. How you doing?
Absolutely. I am fantastic. Absolutely wonderful. Looking forward to the All-Star break. I think it'll be fun to watch Avi Garcia out there if he's indeed able to go. Let me just, if I can, reset for folks tuning in and just start to listen. Avi not in the lineup again today. He's got that jammed finger, and we'll just have to see. We'll talk to Dan Hayes right about 7 o'clock or so and see what that finger might do or not do for him during the All-Star game. But suffice it to say, I think that's where we ought to start, Colin. I don't think when you and I talked, and I think you and I talked first this season right as we got started, I don't think anybody saw this season coming from Avi Garcia, maybe even including Avi Garcia. What's been the most mind-boggling thing to you?
Yeah, you know, it's been, if I almost went into this season where Avi was kind of a forgotten man to me, you know, he had drawn such an ire from the fan base over the past couple of years as the White Sox tried to compete, and he was such a disappointment. And this year, you know, kind of being a rebuilding year, it was like, well, you know, no big deal playing Avi this year because they're not trying to win this year. And of course, now he breaks out and is performing every bit as well as people hoped when they traded for him back in 2013. And, you know, it's, I don't know if it's going to continue. You know, he's obviously nursing an injury right now and amidst a slump, but it's amazing to see. I'm happy that he made the All-Star team. You know, the as the BABIP comes down, kind of the results have kind of stabilized a little bit, but he's still, you know, putting the bat on the ball better than he has at any point in his career. And that's been the most surprising thing. He's shown more power, the power that people thought that he would have when they traded for him. And yeah, I mean, it's been far and away the biggest surprise of the season. And that's when you consider the success of guys like Leury Garcia and Yoenis Sanchez, that's saying quite a bit.
Yeah, we're talking with Colin Whitchurch of BP Southside here on White Sox Weekly. You know, you mentioned some of those other names too, and as bright a star as Avi has been throughout the first couple of months of this season, there are other ballplayers who have really kind of impressed to a level that I wasn't expecting, that I think perhaps others hadn't, whether it's Lurie, whether it's a guy like Melky Cabrera, really kind of backing up another solid season, or, you know, from veteran to rookie, or even a guy like Adam Engel, who probably is here early, and yet I can't get over how good he's been defensively, how good other people tell me he's been defensively, and how well he's stuck with the bat, too.
Yeah, Engel, you know, is someone who I've never been particularly high on. You know, he still strikes out a ton. I don't know how much he's going to be able to put the bat on the ball consistently during his career. Mm-hmm. But the White Sox system has struggled so much to develop position players over the past decade that even if he turns into a fourth outfielder defensive specialist, that's something. He's probably the best defensive center fielder in their system right now.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, obviously, you know, the Jacob May experiment failed in April, and him and Engel have kind of come up together to a certain extent. So, you know, the speed is plus. The defense is very plus. And if he can just figure out a way to put the bat on the ball enough to warrant a major league roster spot, that's a big bonus.
So you guys over at BP put together a midseason top 50 prospect list. I know you've got a little write up there on BP Southside about some of the White Sox that are on there. If you will, and if you and with whichever or how much ever secret sauce you can spill for us on this, what kind of goes into a midseason top 50? Is it a rework of, you know, are you taking that list? Do y'all take that list and just kind of relook at how they put it together, or is this a completely new amalgamation of minor leaguers that you guys come up with, you know, for your midseason top 50?
You know, that's something that we actually talked about. We did a podcast, which you can find on bpsouthside.com, with Craig Goldstein, who's the minor league editor at the big site at Baseball Prospectus.
And a darn
and, you know,
good
we were
one.
We're talking about guys. Yes, he is. And we were kind of talking about where guys fell and where guys rose, and he said it's easy to look at things like that, but we don't take the preseason top 101 into account at all.
Interesting.
You know, they just completely look at it brand new from how the guys are performing now in past performance, what they've learned in the past 3.5 months since that initial list came out, and go from there. And obviously the White Sox are well represented. It's a very different atmosphere than past years. You know, I think the first year that I started looking at prospects really closely, the White Sox had one top 100 prospect, and it was Addison Reed, who was like number 98 or something like that. And now they've got four, and you could even argue for five guys in the top 50 with the kind of caveat of Luis Robert and how they don't know how to rank him just yet.
I thought that was a really good, you know, we'll talk to Chris Getz, the director of player development, here on the other side of the 6:30 news. And he was actually, I think a lot of people were happy with not ranking Luis Robert, having not seen him. I think that was a responsible thing to do. That said, you know, the caveat that was attached to him, like, yeah, he's probably going to be a top 50 guy, worth it. I thought that was a pretty good way to handle a guy that no one's really seen stateside.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they talked about during the process. You know, I speaking to some of the guys before the post went up, they said they had him slotted initially in like the range of about number 30. Mm-hmm. But then it was just, you know, they kind of felt like it was irresponsible to rank someone that they haven't actually been able to get their eyes on personally as a prospect team.
So,
you know, and you can read the reports, you can talk to the sources and the scouts, and they can, some can like them more than others, and you can go based on that, but they figured until we actually get our eyes on this guy, let's just kind of leave him off for now.
Colin Whitchurch, BP Southside, here with us on White Sox Weekly. What kept Yoan Moncada, given what you said about how the midseason top 50 is kind of reimagined, I guess, what kept Yoan Moncada one overall on that list? And why was Ronaldo Lopez? What left Ronaldo Lopez off the top 50?
Sure. Well, in Moncada's case, you know, he was number 5 in the preseason top 101. And if you look at the 4 guys ahead of him, it kind of makes sense that he would jump up to that spot. I believe the top four ahead of him in the preseason were Alex Reyes, who had Tommy John surgery right after that list was published.
Right, that's right.
Andrew Benintendi and Dansby Swanson, who are no longer eligible because they're with the big clubs. And then J.P. Crawford of the Phillies, who's had a terrible season at AAA this year. So, you know, it kind of came down to the top 7, probably, who are on that list, is what they were debating between. And ultimately, and there's an article on baseballprospects.com where they kind of break down how they landed on Moncada, but ultimately it came down to Moncada and Rosario. And the fact that Moncada has 4, you know, most of these guys are 5-tool potential guys. Mm-hmm. Moncada's one of them. And the fact that they figured Moncada has 4 already established tools, the one biggest question is that hit tool because of the swing and miss in his bat. That's what put him ahead of everyone else. It's 4 already established tools and 1 with the potential to be a plus tool still.
Interesting that, you know, the defense is kind of, or the defensive reputation that he's carried has kind of solidified some at second base with Charlotte. I don't know that people are saying he's, you know, Robbie Cano or anything, you know, defensively, though he does definitely compare himself to it. But I think he's been a lot more steady than others had, well, than people had maybe feared.
I think that's definitely true. And I think having some stability at a position this year has probably helped him. I don't know if he's ever going to win a gold glove at second base, but, you know, the Red Sox were bouncing him around a little bit when he got called up in September last year. They had him playing third base. You know, that was more out of need than anything. They had Dustin Pedroia at second. You know, that people have talked that he could even play center field maybe. Obviously, he's huge for a center fielder.
Yeah.
But, you know, having to be able to get consistent reps at second base and know, hey, this is where we're playing you when you get to the majors, that's where you're going to be, I think has probably helped him quite a bit.
So what's with Ronaldo Lopez not making the list? I think perhaps he's been one of the most steady of the top arms in the White Sox system. I think, you know, you could make that argument probably for Michael Kopech as well, though his development track is, you know, not at all close to where Ronaldo Lopez is. I wonder why he didn't make it.
Yeah, that was, you know, we joked. It's, you know, Baseball Prospectus puts 4 White Sox and 4.5 if you include Robert
right.
on their top 50. And we joked that the thing we focus on too much is why didn't Ronaldo Lopez make it? You know, he was number 30 in the top 101.
Right.
So, again, they said they don't base that list off of anything when they're rebuilding it. So that didn't factor in. But we said, why top 30, number 30 overall, you know, 3.5 months ago now, not in the top 50. What's the deal? And basically, the idea is, like most pitching prospects, there's questions as to whether or not he's going to be a starter long term. And to put it bluntly, the concerns over whether or not he can be a starter long term haven't been disproven over the last 3.5 months, according to our prospect team. Now, the White Sox are obviously going to give him every opportunity to start, and there are maybe no other organizations better at getting these guys to their full potential. You know, people said the same thing about Chris Sale when he was drafted, that he was going to be a reliever long term. So there's going to be, you know, there's certainly a lot of questions about it. The White Sox are going to give him the chance, and we'll see which one comes true.
Colin, as we let you go here, and I guess we'll take you out of the prospect depth and put you into the GM chair some, what do you expect this deadline to bring, I think, across the league? I don't know necessarily that I have to pin you down to a move or to the White Sox, mate, because obviously, you know, that the potential moves are there. What do you expect this deadline, though, to look like now that we have a much better shape of both the NL and the AL, as it were?
Yeah, you know, the pitching market is really starting to become more interesting to me. You know, coming into the season, it was that Quintana was pretty far and away the number one pitcher who was going to be available. You know, and that still very well may be true, but a lot of other guys have kind of become available. You know, Sonny Gray's had a decent first half. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I read a report the other day that said that's who the Astros are targeting now is Gray, and they're doing their reports on him. You know, depending on what Tampa wants to do with Chris Archer, depending on what Pittsburgh wants to do with Gerrit Cole, is going to have a lot to do with it. And, you know, the White Sox are still holding the card on Quintana. You know, he's still under team control through 2020. Rick Hahn has preached patience with this. He's not going to panic and make a trade before July 31st just because that's what everyone expects him to do.
Yeah.
So, but with all of this other competition with starting pitchers, it's going to make things really interesting. And, you know, if I were a betting man, instead of the White Sox going to trade Quintana before July 31st, I'd say no. But it's really tough to tell right now.
Interesting. Very interesting. Colin, always good talking baseball with you. Really appreciate you hopping on the show. You do great work there over at BP Southside, and I appreciate the time, man.
Hey, thanks a lot, Connor. Anytime.
You got it. Colin Whitchurch, BP Southside. You can follow him on Twitter as well. I think this is Colin Whitchurch. Probably should have asked him when we had him on the phone. But I believe it is just Colin Whitchurch on Twitter. You can follow us at C1 McKnight. That's the Twitter handle here. You got a couple of notes you want to leave us. Feel free to do that. Get into the mailbag a little later on in the show. You can also give us a ring, 312-591-8900. Got a couple of minutes here on the other side of a quick break. I want to tell you a few things that I kind of thought of as we were talking with Colin, both about prospects and about the potential trade moves at the deadline. Those are coming up, and trade deadline's got me excited every single year since I'm 12, something like that. So I'm looking forward to another one. We are getting close. Of course, the All-Star break's around the corner, and obviously, it's 7:35 tonight. We start our White Sox pregame show. We got the Sox and Rockies. Oh, and I have an area scout reports from Coors Field about who's at and scouting at Coors Field. I'll get to you later. Hold on 1 second. We'll be right back on WLS AM 890.
Hear the Steve Dahl Show at a new time, 3 till 7, weekday afternoons on WLS AM 890.
Calling all Illini alum. Join us on Friday, July 14th, as the White Sox take on the Mariners at 7:10 p.m. You can purchase a specially priced ticket package for the opportunity to watch batting practice before the gates open and to receive a White Sox Illini hat. It is a sharp cap. To purchase this specially priced ticket package, visit whitesox.com/Illini. Yes, you can win it, so to speak. Maybe we'll have one for you. We'll see. We got to find out. That's the other thing we needed to ask on the show today. We gave away a Hawk Harrelson alarm clock about a month ago or so, and we had just people lined up for this thing, and I was so happy to ship it out to the winner that we had. We got to, at some point here, probably after the trade deadline. Yeah, I think after the trade deadline. Once the, you know, the hardcore stuff has kind of faded, we got to give something out again. And I wanted to know, you know, of the upcoming giveaways, maybe we can get our hands on something to give to people who were unable to make it to the game. You know, something like the Illini hat, maybe the 1917 jersey. I don't know, stuff like that. Is there something that you want, you know, because Steve Stone and Jason Benetti have the prize table that they give away from all the time for Sox Math. And we need something to give to people. We just need them. Need something like that. So if you got anything you want, let me know, and we'll try and find something around the ballpark. Maybe we'll just take something from Benetti. Just take like a pullover or something he's supposed to be using for the broadcast. Not tell him about it. Send it to you instead. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. You can also hit us on Twitter at C1 McKnight. That is the Twitter handle. C1 McKnight is the Twitter handle. We had a phone call. We lost you. Sorry, Lisa. Call right back. We'll get right to you. Promise. Coming up after the 6:30 news, we will talk with Chris Getz, the director of player development for the White Sox. And I think you want to tune into the conversation. He and I talked yesterday morning. He was on his way to Miami for the Futures game. And by the way, Futures game is Sunday, tomorrow. Yoan Moncada, Zach Collins, and Michael Kopech are all participating in this game for the White Sox. There exists the possibility then that Michael Kopech is being caught by Zach Collins while Yoan Moncada is hitting, which would be a ton of fun. That'd be a blast. They split them up into the Team USA, Team World kind of thing. I'm not sure why it has to be USA against the world, but it is. That's the way they're doing it. So Kopech and Collins are on the same team, and Moncada is on Team World. They look to be pretty evenly spliced rosters, although Team World there are more countries in the world than there are in USA. It's just the way it works. So we'll see how the thing ends up, but there is, as always, a boatload of talent And I don't, I've been looking through and trying to find it because actually Chris asked about it, whether a team had had three players in the Futures game. And I believe it's only happened once or twice. I believe it's only happened once or twice. And even then, these guys are, I just think it's been interesting to watch the development of all these young prospects. I think it's such a different and fun way to go about a season in which your team has kind of said, we are acquiring young talent. We are looking to enrich the depth here. And then you just get so many ball players to watch, wonder about, and kind of, you know, explore whether or not they're going to be big leaguers, whether they've got that kind of, you know, that kind of game. Sox fans, don't miss the signature podcast, The Cycle. Comedian in Chicago and Pat McGann, along with a rotating group of co-hosts, chats with athletes and celebrities about sports life and everything in between. Subscribe via your podcast app today. I know Matt Davidson was one of the recent guests on that podcast. Matt came back into the clubhouse after having done the podcast and would not stop laughing. Apparently, it was a very enjoyable time for everybody, probably including Matt. So it's a fun one. Go take a listen. I've done it. Pat is a hysterical human being, so you should listen to that show after you're done listening to this one on your podcast. By the way, you can find us on the whole podcast, wherever you podcast, or just head to WLSAM.com/White Sox. Go to the White Sox Weekly page, and everything we've ever done is right there on the website. Probably a bad thing, but everything we've ever done is there, including, or will be including, the upcoming interview we've got coming up. Chris Getz, White Sox Director of Player Development. He's next on White Sox Weekly. This is WLS, AM 890.